Good afternoon, everyone. We'll call the first meeting of 2012's Transportation Policy Finance Committee to order. And we'll ask Anna if she'll note the roll as people come in and have a seat. Folks, before we get to approval of the minutes, if you'll pull out your packet and get ready for the meeting, we'll somebody be prepared for a motion for the minutes. But before we do that, we have some new staff with us this year. Sometimes things change, and I know that in our body, we lost our dear friend Corinne Zewers to MnDOT, moved her down the tunnel next door. We miss her already. However, we have some very competent help that will break in here at the committee. Melissa Johnson, you want to tell us just a few brief things about yourself? Don't plow too deep. We can take care of that later over coffee or something.
Okay. My name is Melissa Johnson, and I spent the last 9 years at Ehlers & Associates, a public finance consulting firm, as a financial advisor and a financial analyst. So I have quite a bit of background in the public finance and bonding area, and will be a quick study on transportation, too. So thanks.
Melissa, welcome aboard. Glad you're here. DFL has graced our presence with a new staff member, one of my favorite DFL staffers, Nancy Connolly. Nancy, just say hi, welcome to the committee, and why we can't have you in this committee all year. Just if I can help with that, let me know.
Okay. I bet you weren't asking me to respond.
You can't have <been. laughs> And I'm not going to ask Christina Pearson to respond, but Christina is our new GOP researcher, taking care of the this side of the table over here, replacing David Strom, who was a session only from last year. So that's the around the table. I don't see any other new faces. You all look pretty familiar and pretty friendly, so that's a good deal. Approval of the minutes. Does somebody have a motion for the minutes? Okay, I'll assign someone. Representative Champion moves the minutes. Seconded by Representative Vogel. I didn't see out of the right side of my eye here. Discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. You know, one of my favorites is please set phasers to stun or turn them off. It's not like while you're talking I'm going to take a call from my mom or anything. So, and if you do have them on the table, try not to put them close to the microphones because it does put that pattern in the tape and makes it really tough for staff that's trying to transcribe your thoughts and your expressions as they're trying to reduce that to writing. So, the first bill we're going to hear today on the agenda, House File 730. Representative Masrall, are you in the room at the moment? Here he is. And since Representative Masrall is not on the committee, I'll ask Representative Vogel. You were anxious to participate a few moments ago. Would you make the motion to send this to civil law?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. So the bill is in front of us. Mr. Masrall, Representative Masrall, is there any amendments or anything we need to offer to get it in the shape you wish to discuss it? It appears that there is an A1 author's amendment here. Would you like us to move that before you explain the bill?
I would ask that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you to pull that microphone over and point it at you. There you go. Thanks, Pat. Representative Vogel, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, we have the A1 amendment in front of us to get it in the discussion shape. The author wishes. Are there questions to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor of the A1 amendment as offered, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And the bill is now in the shape which Representative Masrall would like to explain it to us. Representative Masrall, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 730 was heard last year in the Commerce Committee, and this is a bill that addresses the No-Fault Insurance Act. This is called the Fairness for Responsible Drivers Act. No-Fault Insurance really relies upon everyone carrying their own insurance, and it's sort of a mutual responsibility that we all have to one another, that we carry that insurance to cover portions of what we need to cover for ourselves as well as other drivers. What this House File 730 does is that it increases criminal fines for those who are driving or owning a vehicle driving without insurance, and it also limits civil remedies for drivers who are injured in an accident but do not themselves carry their own insurance. It limits it so that non-economic damages, that is those damages that are not strictly out-of-pocket type of expenses, it's the commonly known as the pain and suffering type damages, are not available for a claimant in one of three circumstances, either if they are convicted of alcohol or a controlled substance impairment at the time of the accident, if they're the owner of an uninsured vehicle that's involved in the accident, or if they're operating a vehicle involved in the accident without having appropriate insurance. There is an exception so that someone who is injured by another driver who is in fact under the influence would be able to recover damages even though they are themselves uninsured. The criminal penalty increase is from $200 to $600. The $600 is intended to more closely match what a premium might be for 6 months of this insurance. So, Mr. Chair, that's kind of a brief summary of what this bill does.
Thank you, Representative Masseroll. Questions to Representative Champion.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Here's my question to the author of the bill. Perhaps you can help me understand this. Currently, under state law, there's a comparative fault analysis that's done whenever there's an accident. So can you tell me how this particular bill will affect that that comparative fault analysis in order to determine if someone is at fault and if someone else is deemed negligent? Are they not able to receive compensation or sue if we were to pass your bill?
Representative Masseroll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Champion. This bill does not take into account the comparative negligence or the comparative responsibility for the accident. In other words, a person who in fact does not have the insurance would not be able to recover the non-economic damages.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Champion, follow.
So just to be clear, I see that when we look at your title of this bill, it says Establishing the Fairness for Responsible Drivers Act. And so would you say that a person, maybe it's best to use a scenario. So what if I'm driving and usually I have insurance, and let's say I missed my ability to pay my insurance. No one sends me a notification. I think I'm, you know, legal. I'm driving down the street. Someone runs into me. Let's say they run a red light. And I'm injured as a result of it. So are you saying to me, just so that I'm clear, under your bill, because my insurance lapsed under my scenario, that I'm not able to recover from the person who hit me by running a red light?
Representative Masseroll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Champion, if in fact your insurance had lapsed, that would be the case. In that particular scenario, you know, and I don't have the cites here, but I am fairly certain there are laws that would require that the insurance company give you adequate and multiple notice before, in fact, they could lapse. So, in fact, the notice would have to be given. And it wouldn't be something that could occur without some negligence or default on the part of the person who is actually purchasing that insurance or should be purchasing the insurance.
Before we pursue the questioning any further, I just want to mention the bill has several parts to it. The one that pertains particularly to this committee is the second section dealing with the penalties for violation and the status of the violation. However, the chair has always been, just in the interest of shedding light and being fully informed, allowed wide latitude on the questioning. But just members, if you serve on civil law, where this will go next if it prevails here, and back to public safety, I think there's a couple stops left to go on this bill. But just so you know, kind of the track record here. Follow up, are we good?
I'm good, Representative.
Thank you. Representative Morrow, I think you had your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll come back to your process point in a moment. Representative Masseroll, I'm trying to understand the two parts of the bill. That there seems to be there's both the stick, if you will, of increasing the penalty. Is it your intent that by increasing the penalty, what you described to be 6 months' worth of insurance coverage, that would be sufficient to get more people to make sure that they're insured?
Representative Mazzaro?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrill. That is certainly sort of a two-pronged approach to giving incentive to carry the insurance, to keep your insurance.
Follow-up?
Mr. Chair, I'm actually going to have a few questions, if I may ask the leniency of you to
please
ask the questions. They'll build one upon the other.
Look my way before you go on.
I will do that, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Mazzaro, do you have any data that shows that increasing the penalty for non-insurance from, say, $200 to $600 does increase the rate of insuredness of drivers?
Members in Mazzaro.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrill, I don't have that data.
Representative Mazzaro, do you have a witness in the audience that would...
We do have a witness that perhaps could. Bob Johnson is here.
Representative Morrow, do you want to have somebody come down and talk about that?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I should ask you, procedure-wise, I don't even know if there's a witness list. Do you have a list of witnesses?
I have one person on the list who probably testify, probably not favorably to the bill. But
I think I can go on, but certainly if Representative Mazzaro wants to bring that person up.
I'll wait for Representative Mazzaro to ask for that. Go ahead, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mazzaro, thank you. And certainly I'm interested in hearing that, but what I see the bill doing is really two different ways of trying to encourage people to be insured. One is to increase the penalty if they're not insured, to triple it, in fact, from $200 to $600. It seems that the second incentive that you have here to be insured is that if you're uninsured and you're an accident victim, you may not be able to recover for your pain and suffering under this bill, depending on the circumstances. Is that correct?
Representative Mazzaro?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrill, that is correct. And I think the criminal penalty portion of it is pretty straightforward. It's approximately the premium for 6 months of the insurance had it been covered. The Section 1 part of the bill that deals with the pain and suffering and the inability to recover on that really gets at the idea that we're all mutually responsible to one another for the system to work. You know, we need to be covering ourselves and participating in the system. A person who does not have the insurance, is not paying for the insurance, is not participating as the rest of us are.
Thank you.
One last question? Well, actually, it's not one last one, if I might, Mr. Chair, because I actually am going to offer an amendment in a moment.
Oh, good. Thank you. We're looking for that.
Yes. I'm just trying to understand before I try to determine whether I need to offer it or not.
Mm-hmm.
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Mazzaro, so I'm trying to, in my old days as an insurance defense attorney, I was trying to imagine scenarios, and I think Representative Champion may have been getting to them. So I'm imagining, for example, I'm stopped at a four-way stop, a red light. And I get rear-ended by a driver who's texting. If I am uninsured, I can recover my medical or compensatory damages under your bill, but I cannot recover my pain and suffering damages. Is that correct?
Representative Mazzaro?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrill, that's correct.
Representative Morrill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mazzaro, so if I, for example, have sent my insurance payment in, but I didn't put a stamp on the envelope, so my insurance is not current, and I get rear-ended in that situation, is there a possibility I may be barred for recovery of my non-economic, my pain and suffering damages because the check is coming back to me in the mail?
Representative Mazzaro.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrill, certainly there's a possibility. Again, there are, my understanding, laws in place, however, that would require multiple notices before the insurance, in fact, could be canceled on you if you've been carrying insurance.
Go ahead, Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Mazzaro, so I can understand, it's not your intent to include within the scope of this, the second prong of this bill, of the two prongs, the people who might be either careless, inadvertent, honest mistake, they're not current on their policy. The check is in the mail. The check may have bounced. It may be a bank error. I'm not hearing that those folks you're going after. Am I correct?
Representative Mazzaro.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrill, that is correct. We're looking for the people that are not participating in the system.
Mr. Chair, I do then have an A2 amendment that I think mirrors what we were just hearing about this second prong, and I'm giving it to our
page. Yeah, would you bring that this way first to the page before we hand it out? And, yeah, members, just to be clear, because of the nature of the posting on the amendments, we waived the 24-hour rule for this bill, which is why I'm letting Representative Morrow do this.
And Mr. Chair, just so I can be clear, we did alert your staff.
Yes, you did.
This morning, as soon as I had a chance to read the bill.
Right. That's why I wanted to just see what it is here and see. This is an amendment we will discuss for the bill. While the bill's being passed out, there are several other people with questions.
I'm going to ask if you'll yield to, and
this is to the second section of the bill, which is under the jurisdiction of this committee, which is I also wanted to make sure we were talking about. Representative Biskins, thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Maswell, on page 3, lines 4 and 5, says the court shall impose a fine of not less than, current law says $200, nor more than the maximum amount authorized by law. Representative Maswell, what is that maximum amount currently authorized by law?
Representative Maswell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I am not seeing line 25 on page 3.
Line 4 and 5, Representative Maswell.
Oh, okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I don't know what that maximum would be. I think the idea in the drafting was that it'd never be more than any amount that's authorized by law.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Maswell, I understand that, but I think it's important for me, anyway, to know what is that maximum amount. I mean, are we narrowing it right now? Does current law say $200 to $1,000, and we're now saying it's got to be in between $600 and $1,000? Is it $200 to $2,500? See, that I think that's an important number. The second thing then, Representative Maswell, could you enlighten me as to what percent of the fines currently imposed by the courts are between $200 and $600? What problem are we trying to fix? Are most fines under the $600 that you're now trying to kick up?
Representative Maswell?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I don't have the answer to that. The reason for the $600 is to more closely match what would, in other words, the penalty is what the person would have been paying had they carried their insurance, and it doesn't provide for a fine that is less than what they would have to pay, so, you know, there's no incentive to avoid getting the insurance. That's the reason for the $600.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Maswell. Just not a question, but an observation. I would think the courts right now have the latitude of making that determination, which we are now imposing on the courts. And I do believe most judges would, in leveraging the fine, you know, look to that issue. But we are now saying, I guess, in effect, unless I know what the number is, we're now saying that the courts aren't doing their job, aren't imposing tough enough fines, which I'm not quite sure, without knowing the percentages, that is a true assumption to make.
Thank you. Mr. Burris has a comment to this point. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I'm a little bit out on a limb here because I'd need to look around a little bit more to make sure I've got the numbers right, but I'm sure enough to make a claim here. I believe that the maximum penalty on a misdemeanor is $1,000, and the maximum penalty on a gross misdemeanor is $3,000. And so the language is written... you know, that you were just looking at is written that way because the penalty could be a misdemeanor or a gross misdemeanor depending on the circumstances of the violation.
Representative Biskins, does that satisfy your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It does indeed satisfy one of them. The other question I'd like to know the answer to is what percent of the fines currently being meted out are between $200 and $600?
Yeah, I doubt that Mr. Burris could help us with that, but perhaps another testifier who's coming forward in a moment could help with that. Representative Sanders, you had a question, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if perhaps Mr. Burris can help with this or well. I thought we had kind of settled this issue a little bit, at least last year in Commerce, where we had spoken quite a bit to the issue of intent or not, or a person knowingly. We voted on a very similar amendment in Commerce, which I know this isn't the Commerce Committee. But One of the issues with car insurance is you have multiple opportunities that you are notified that your insurance payment is due, that it is past due, and then I believe you are eventually given a notice of cancellation, at which time you then even have an additional 30 days after your policy has technically lapsed. I believe it's 30, if not more, where you can actually retroactively pay your premiums and your insurance policy is retroactively reinstated. So I think that there are multiple opportunities. A person, I would find it very hard that a person would not know that their insurance was not in effect. And again, you have multiple windows of time. I think 30 days to let you know that you're late. Again, you have another notice to let you know that it's been canceled. And then again, you have another, I believe it's at least 30 days after that, where you can retroactively pay your premiums that are past due, and your policy is then again reinstated.
Thank you. Representative Mazarol, do you care to respond to that or just a comment? Representative Sanders, was there a question in there? I'm sorry, I was doing committee work on the side.
Well, Mr. Chair, no, it was just, again, to kind of Representative Champion's questioning, Representative Morrow's questions, and to the amendment again about this idea of a mistake where I just happened to not put a stamp on the envelope or something to that effect. The laws are, I believe, on the side of the consumer or the insured when it comes to having many, many opportunities to keep your insurance up to date.
Thank you for shedding a little light on the discussion. I appreciate that. Members, we are certainly welcome to do any committee business we would like on this bill. I do know that there have been other stops. This came here from Commerce, I believe, and is going to at least two other stops after this one. Just so you know, I'm going to cut you a little slack, but we do need to get into the Minlar's discussion here after the next bill is up and discussed. Probably the most important thing we're going to do here today. Representative Hausman?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is just to the point that was raised because it was a point Representative Mazarol made earlier. And sometimes we have our own personal experiences that give us some information about this. And maybe I have a totally incompetent company, but it's not a fly-by-night. It's one of the, like, big four or five. And I have four policies with them, two cars, homeowners, and an overall liability policy. They all come due at the same time of the year, and I thought I had paid everything, and went happily along till the next year when all of the payments came due and the liability policy one wasn't in there, and I asked about it, and they said, well, that lapsed because it was never paid last year. No notices, none. Never was I informed that the liability policy. So if it's a state law, that company was breaking state law. But, I mean, there's been an implication that it's required by state law multiple times. So we're giving some information that hopefully is true, and maybe I was an aberration, but I would have not knowingly done that was it, and it could have perhaps happened to one of the other policies.
Well, I assure you, Representative Hausman, you're not an aberration, you're an outstanding state representative. But thank you for
do we have any it's been implied that it's state law. Are we speaking from authority on that?
Boy, if we were in a Commerce Committee, we'd have several people here that could speak right to that. Anyone else in the Commerce Committee care to weigh in on that briefly?
Since it's been given by both the author and one committee member, I thought if it's not, I think we always have, it always seems important to make certain that we're
Representative Sanders,
giving
do you want
correct
to comment
information.
To that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I mentioned at the beginning of my comments, I didn't know if Mr. Burris could comment further on that or not. I know that this isn't the Commerce Committee. Mm-hmm. Perhaps this is something that Mr. Johnson would come down and speak to. But I know that we certainly can get the information out on that.
Certainly, and of course, this is going to civil law next, where I think they also would be speaking expertly to these very comments. So, thank you. Mr. Burris, do you feel compelled to add any more information? Do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chair, no, I'm sorry, I don't. That is outside my knowledge
Mr.
area.
Mr. Chair, I guess just for the committee record then, I mean, I think it's always important since both the author and a committee member have suggested that the answer was there's already a state law, there's at least some question about that.
Thank you for your observation.
Mr. Chair,
Mazrall.
Mr. Chair, may I ask my witness to join me here? He maybe can answer that very directly.
Yes, Mr. Johnson, if you'd like to come down, please do. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota.
Certainly.
I don't have the code book in front of me, Mr. Chairman, but if your counsel can turn to the index in Chapter 65E, there is a specific state statute that requires notice to the consumer prior to cancellation for non-payment of non-payment of premium with the number of days specified in the law. So it's a long-standing state law. Any insurer that doesn't comply with that cannot cancel the policy for non-payment if they don't give that advance notice. So I don't have the code memorized, but if I looked at the index, I could find the specific statute and give you the citation. That is the law of Minnesota in regards to automobile policies.
And Mr. Chair, okay. Just to follow up, because two members have suggested there are multiple times that somebody would be reminded. You're saying there's a requirement prior to that there's a notice, but there's no notice after saying your insurance has lapsed.
Mr. Johnson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm just saying that an in-force policy, that if you're making payments on it, you neglect, the payment doesn't get to the insurer for whatever reason, cannot be canceled for non-payment of premium without an advance notice that is addressed to the policyholder, the individual, whatever's in the insurer's books, ahead of that cancellation. And the insurers that I work with, which is most of the ones that sell the insurance that you all buy, there's a couple of notices that go out, and then even if you haven't made the payment within that time frame, then you'll get another notice that indicates that the premium's due. If you want to maintain your coverage, you need to get the premium in. I think that the point is, if the issue is, can there be an instance where someone isn't aware at all, I have good coverage, why isn't it there, and I haven't been notified? If that didn't happen, the insurer didn't comply with state law, or the individual, if they didn't get their mail. I mean, there are circumstances that we surely could construct that could happen if somebody didn't get the required notice, but the notice has to be sent. Frankly, if the notice wasn't sent, I'm confident you could ask someone from the Commerce Department what would the enforcement department do if the insurer didn't comply with that requirement, and my guess is they'd say you can't have an effective cancellation for non-payment because you didn't meet the notice requirement.
So while we're letting Mr. Burris look up some of the Commerce Committee legislation, I'm going to move to Representative Leidiger for a question. Bob, if you'd just stay right there for a moment, that'd be a good thing. Representative Leidiger, thank you for your patience. You had a question.
No, just a quick question. We're trying to focus on the increasing the penalties from 200 to 600. I think our committee here is supposed to really be looking at that issue. And it's really a matter of deterrence, right? Raising the amount, the penalty amount is supposed to deter people from driving without insurance. Do we have some sort of research from other states that have done this, that have seen an increase in more people being insured? Something to fall back on that this is going to accomplish the mission?
Now that Mr. Johnson's here, can you speak to that, Mr. Johnson?
And Mr. Chairman, the answer is that we have a number of other state studies that look at the broad issue of uninsured motorists and why are people driving without insurance, and then what are the remedies, because every state has a compulsory insurance law, all 50. So it's illegal to drive in any state in America without carrying an auto policy. And there's a big study in California and a big study in Nevada. I don't have them here. We had some of these citations at the Commerce Committee. There isn't a clean correlation, candidly, between a higher penalty and that you're going to get a higher compliance. For this reason, it's not the only issue. You can write the penalty, but if the courts, who are entrusted with enforcing it, if I could jump back, an earlier question was asked about, do our penalties at the low end or the high end, I believe they're at the low end, and then if the courts aren't enforcing or applying the $200 penalty, then that you may not get anything out of the higher penalty. We do believe that the penalty section is one part of a multi-pronged approach that's necessary to enforce our compulsory auto insurance law. We're losing ground. We believe there's 500,000 plus cars on the road of roads of Minnesota today without car insurance, 500,000 plus. Based on the estimates that are out there, we don't have the time here, but we could get into some of where those estimates come from. And if we're losing ground, in other words, more people are driving without insurance, which shifts costs to the consumers that buy the product. Remember again that in the policies that we buy, one of the mandated coverages is uninsured motorist coverage. So if you pick up your policy, we're required to buy a coverage in our own policy that pays for, you know, damages to you if the other party is driving without insurance. So that's a mandated coverage. So, Mr. Chairman and committee members, the penalty we believe is one part of it, but I've not seen a study, candidly, that isolates just the penalty to say if you go higher. We do believe a higher penalty will deter those drivers that have the resources. There are people that have the money and are not buying the coverage. We think a higher penalty could affect that group. There are also people that are not buying insurance because they don't have the ability to pay for the price of the product. That's a separate issue. So if you look at, there's about three groups of drivers out there. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, but this will shorten any testimony I give on Representative Chairman Hoppe's bill, because we're working on that bill too. That's another part of the equation dealing with uninsured drivers, which is having a system in place that's actually going to find out who's got the coverage. And we'd like to work with you and the state in doing that. But if the groups of drivers are the people that economically can't afford it, then there's a group of drivers who can't afford it and they choose not to buy it. And then there's a group that just flat skip the laws, period, habitual law breakers. That's even a different group. So they each have almost a different characteristics and probably different solutions to get at it. We believe the penalty is legitimate for one group of drivers. It might not work for others, but if the courts don't enforce it, then it doesn't matter what we write the penalty at. So I think for us, part of this is trying to make that statement that we think it is legitimate, put a higher dollar value that will then give the incentive to those individuals that have the resources to pay for the coverage and are deliberately choosing to drive on the roads of Minnesota without insurance, shifting the costs onto the rest of us.
Follow up, Representative Blattinger.
Well, I'm looking at the actual bill, and it doesn't differentiate between those that have the resources to be able to pay for it and those that don't. But yet this is a mandate to increase the penalties to $600 for everybody.
I think it's going to come back to the courts. In other words, we can't dictate what the courts are going to do. They're going to have an individual in front of them, and if they've been given a citation for driving without insurance, this law being the penalty, they'll have in front of them, and we'll make a decision. What are the Hennepin County courts or what are the Ramsey County courts going to do with those drivers? There are some people here who could probably speak to that. There is some pattern and track record about what the courts do with that and whether or not they actually levy the fine. If they don't levy it, then that section doesn't have any impact on it, which is why, from our industry's perspective, it's a multiple-pronged approach to dealing with it. This is one part of it, not the only one at all. We think Section 1 is a very legitimate approach found in many states. I guess I want to make sure, and I don't know if the committee is going to permit, but I am interested in the amendment. Mr. Chairman would like to comment on it if that's at the appropriate time.
Certainly. That's coming up here in just a moment.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mazzaro. I guess the question I have is goes back to this, what the amendment is, the knowingly part of it, because like Representative...
Hold your comments until that amendment comes up,
sure.
Then, because I'm going to have that in just a second here.
Thank you.
Will you? Thanks. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a comment on the amendment, but I'll wait for that.
Please.
The question is, do you have kind of the scale of where other states fall in terms of the amount of the fine, or is there an average in terms of the 50 states that you're aware of? Are we low now, and that would be high, or maybe we'd just be average?
Mr. Chairman,
Johnson.
The short answer is that other state laws are going to read like this. In other words, while there's a range, I don't think I'd be able to give you a definitive answer that I think they similarly, for their crimes of a misdemeanor or a gross misdemeanor, there's a range of a dollar fine. And I think you have to translate it back to within the state to find out what are the court systems and the law enforcement actually charging out, what are the penalties they are utilizing. In my opinion, for driving without the required insurance, it's at the low end. And there may, I don't know, Hennepin County or some of them have statistics that can validate that, you know, with more specifics, concrete. But in my conversations, and I have had numerous meetings with Hennepin County and law enforcement and the police chiefs and the individuals who are all involved in this process, all of whom would like to figure out a better system and I think a more effective way to get people in Minnesota for driving on the road, they should comply with the compulsory insurance law because it's shifting costs to a lot of people. And if we're losing ground on that, which we are, then what can we do to help, including enforce the law to make sure people are compliant with it?
Representative Benson? I'm good. Representative Hornstein, do you have comments to the amendment or to the...
To the bill, Ms.
To the bill itself, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that, Representative Morzo, you have waiver, if you will, for the DWI or impairment driver. I'm wondering why, you know, for example, texting while driving, the studies show that that's equivalent of 0.08 impairment when people are texting or even talking on the phone, but we don't have laws to ban cell phone use, but we do texting. Why isn't texting included in this? It's a similar situation as someone who's driving DWI or impaired at 0.08. General?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, I think that the primary reason is because, as you point out, that currently isn't against the law in Minnesota, you know, not directly anyway, other than as being careless, perhaps. But this, you know, the exception in this law, in House File 730, is really one that directly relates to being convicted of a crime that is on the books currently. I believe Mr. Johnson has a comment as well.
Yes. Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, I think the other thing is that we looked at other current state laws like Section 1. In other words, this is not a new proposal. And we looked at what those state laws with the similar penalty on the driver driving without insurance. And that drunk driver exception is found in state laws like California, New Jersey, New York, other states that have a law like Section 1 are Colorado and Iowa, Louisiana, Oregon. So it's not a new concept, and I can't tell you all those laws have a drunk driving exception, but I know other laws have similar exception. That's where we got it from.
Follow up, Representative.
Thank you. Well, Representative Masvidal and Mr. Johnson, I mean, but texting, there is a ban on texting in Minnesota. So just, there's not for cell phone use, but there is for texting, just to be clear. And, you know, Mr. Johnson, you mentioned the other states, and I think you answered in response to Representative Leidiger's question that there is no correlation. So, I mean, I have multiple concerns with the bill, and one is that we don't have evidence that it works in the other states. But, you know, if you're going to have this exemption for drunk driving, I think you should have it for texting and other similar kinds of distractions, because we know not only is it Minnesota state law that you can't text while drive, but we know study after study after study, the science is in, it's indisputable, this is equivalent to 0.08. So why one and not the other? I think it's just one concern I want to raise, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Hornstein.
Yeah, I do still.
Let me ask Mr. Burris if he has comment from the Commerce section. Are you ready to comment on that, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, I did find a couple of statutes. I would not consider this a full research because I've only been in 65B a couple of times. So it's really sort of outside my territory, but there are some notice requirements. One regards when an insurer plans on canceling or reducing the limits, and that's a 60-day notice requirement. There's an exception for the first 59 days that the policy first went into effect, and that's essentially a 10-day notice requirement. And then on renewal, it's a if there's an if the insurer does not intend to renew a policy, there's a 59-day notification requirement.
Okay.
And there are various details and exceptions and so forth to those, but that I think is the essence of it.
For the information of the committee, I just want to make sure Mr. Burris read that people have actually, the people that came to this place before us actually have thought of these things and attempted to address those in the code. Representative Gauthier, thank you, Mr. Burris. Representative Gauthier, do you have comments to the amendment or to the bill as it stands?
Mr. Chair, to the bill.
Okay, please, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In an ideal world, that would be great if insurance companies do send notices, but we don't live in an ideal world, and people move and things get lost and so on and so forth. So I'll leave that for the amendment. But going back to this penalty, you know, if we have no history or science or data that says increasing the penalty from $200 to $600 will increase enforcement and purchase of insurance, then I'm confused as to why we are doing that. And to the testifier who made the statement, is we kind of have three kinds of groups of people, and I would agree with that. We have people who habitually just don't have any regard for the law. We have people who forget, and then there are people who can't afford it. And so, you know, I guess then I have to start thinking about how it is that this would affect my constituency. And I don't live in a suburb, or I live in an inner city with a lot of poor people. And so I understand that you have to make choices, pay the rent or get car insurance, pay the light bill or get car insurance. And they're not nice choices, and I'm not trying to make excuses, but that is reality. And so then I have to ask, what is my role as a legislator? And is that to increase penalties on people who are struggling to get by in an economy that is kind of floundering? And we're not raising everybody up. People are sinking, you know, in my district alone, and not even the whole district, 331 foreclosures. And so why do I bring that up? Because it involves also payments of house mortgages and house insurance, car insurance. People are being overwhelmed. And so, you know, my opposition to this then is about increasing penalties on people who can't afford it, who aren't going to be able to make a policy payment anyway, because they're struggling. And so at some point, we need to have some responsibility of, it's nice to say we're all responsible and this is the only way it works, but that's not real. And it's not real that insurance companies always send notices, because I'm in a dispute with an insurance company about notices and whether or not my mother's life insurance is valid or not. So I guess I have a lot of problems with this bill because it seems unfair to me that it targets a group disproportionately than other groups of people. And, you know, part of what we're supposed to be doing here is bringing forth justice. And I don't see any justice in this, and I think that's why we have issues with courts trying to figure out intent here. And I think your intent, Representative Mazarol, is to target those people who could afford it and can't, but the unintended consequences is a number of my constituents who can't afford it and have to pay the rent or feed their kids.
Well, just to be clear, Representative Gauthier, I represent what's perceived to be a very prosperous suburban area. Same issues there.
Yep. I understand that,
Mr. House payment versus whatever. It cuts across the state, yep, which raises some of the concerns many of us have. Before you respond to that, Representative Mazarol, I want to look to the IT guy. You're the audiovisual guy. Are you holding a microphone in your box there? Do you want to go ahead and work around here while we're talking? Can you do that? Okay, folks, we got the scratchy mic back again this year. We hope maybe we've taken the session off, but apparently it hasn't. And I trust that's none of us actually doing that on purpose. So if we can let him work over our shoulders while we continue the discussion, will that be okay with everyone? Good, we're going to proceed then. Representative Mazarol, to the point about why you're actually bringing the bill forward, if you'd care to talk about that, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Gauthier, thank you for your comments. I understand exactly what it is that you're expressing there. I think as we step back, though, and look at the system itself, the insurance system itself, we're all dependent upon drivers on the road who are availing themselves of the privilege of moving a huge piece of metal down the road where it can hurt people very seriously. We're all dependent upon each of us complying with the laws of being insured to the point where if someone does get injured, there's someone to back up the cost of those injuries, and that's the insurance companies. And you know, the idea here is it's a privilege. Take responsibility for availing yourself of that privilege. But thank you for your comments, Mr. Gauthier. I do understand what you're expressing.
Representative Morrow, would you care to offer the A2 amendment now, and we'll discuss and dispose of this amendment?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Yeah, I will move the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and I misspoke, members. This actually is Commerce Committee work. This is in the first section of the bill and will probably be dealt again in civil law if it does not prevail here. But nonetheless, we will accept the A2 amendment. And Representative Morrow, you want to speak to it briefly?
Well, and first, Mr. Chair, I would like to thank you for your latitude. I'm not on any of those other committees, again, given my background in the issue. Mm-hmm. I'd like to maybe build on Representative Masrell's comments.
Certainly.
Representative Masrell, I think I indicated a little bit earlier, I'm worried about the person who doesn't know their policy isn't in effect. There's an honest mistake that's been made along the line. And I certainly, Mr. Johnson, respect what you're saying about the notices, but we can all either talk about personal experiences or we can hypothetically imagine someone is overseas serving our country, or the one spouse is getting the mail but doesn't tell the other spouse they haven't been paying the bills. We can imagine scenarios. And again, I'm willing to accept that face value. The insurance companies are trying to do the level best to notify. But nonetheless, sometimes, members, people don't get notice that their insurance is not in effect. They think it is. They have every reason to believe it is. They just don't know that there's been a problem. I think, Representative Masrell, for the purposes of your bill, to say that this applies to people who knowingly drive our streets without insurance. And maybe Representative Gauthier and I are not exactly on the same, because I'm kind of with you. I want people on the roads who are insured. Absolutely. But if I think I'm insured, and I just don't know I'm not, it doesn't seem like we help in this bill to punish or deter them. If they think they've done everything according to the law, they've just made an honest mistake. So for that reason, Representative Masrell, I would be offering the A2 amendment, and Mr. Chair, I'd be asking for a roll call, because I think this is an important vote.
Representative Masrell, roll call request. Representative Masrell, you care to respond to the A2 amendment? Do you have it in front of you there?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I feel we're understanding what we're trying to get at here. A very similar amendment was defeated in Commerce Committee, and what I would like to do is look at this before it gets to civil law and have it looked at there, because I think there might be a way of getting this corresponding to the types of issues we're talking about here, notice, you know, and that sort of thing, in a way that doesn't so quite so broadly state it as this amendment does.
If I may follow up with Mr.
Representative Morrow, and then Representative Nelson wants to speak to it too.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Masrell, I would be okay working with you on this. But my concern, I hope you imagine, is this is not going to come to the Agriculture Committee, and this is not going to come to higher ed, and I'm not on civil law. And in commerce, it was an 11-11 vote, I think. I think it was an even vote. So I think this is obviously an important issue. Maybe either people can differ, or the work didn't happen to resolve it so there isn't that split. My understanding is the bill is essentially the same as it was when it left commerce. So, Mr. Chair, there may be other procedural suggestions that Representative Masrell might suggest for enabling the committee to do this work on this bill before it goes to the next committee, but I'd be reluctant to send it to the next committee where I don't have a voice.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the testimony or the anecdote I want to give here is relating just to this amendment, because as Representative Hausman pointed out earlier, and maybe it's because what she's talking about is an umbrella policy, and in my personal cases, my aunt, who was 90 years old, who'd had her home insurance by the same insurance company for over 50 years, inadvertently didn't pay it. And about a year and a half later, we found out that she didn't have insurance on the house. And then the insurance company, she never couldn't find any notices that she hadn't paid her premium, didn't have insurance. And we had a fight like hell to get the insurance company, who had insured this residence for over 50 years, to rewrite a policy. And they basically didn't want to do it because she was 90 years old. Fortunately, we had put a new roof on the house a couple years before, they finally agreed to rewrite the policy. But and like I said, maybe it's different because it's not homeowner's insurance. And in Representative Hausman's case, it was an umbrella policy, not an auto insurance policy. Maybe the notices are different, but there was no notice given. And so, you know, imagine that house burning down, and my aunt's, you know, this house that had been my grandparents' house, to have been, there'd been no repercussions or no way for her to recover the loss of that. So I think this amendment is a good amendment, I think, because I also serve on Commerce and voted for this amendment, and as was pointed out here, it went down on an 11-11 tie. I think this is a good amendment. It'll get at the person that, for whatever reason, missed the payment, or missed the notices, or missed the payment inadvertently. We don't want to be hurting these people. I mean, the part about the fine, I'm kind of nonplussed about that because, yeah, I can understand some of the reasoning that about 6 months insurance for most people that would cover, might be more of a deterrent, but to go at somebody that may not know it. I mean, I went through this summer myself where somebody went through a stop sign and was going well over the 30-mile-hour speed limit and totaled out my truck. And fortunate for side airbags that I was uninjured, but it was a pretty devastating accident that we had, and it was only a block from my house. So I think this here is a good amendment. I would vote for it.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I fully understand the reasons why the amendment's being offered, and I kind of empathize in a way. I worked for the post office for 31 years, so it's not the first time it's in the mail. But however, the way it's written, I'm reminded of another committee that I work on that goes to intent. And I'm not trying to cast any dispersions to any of the folks in the audience or around the table that have law degrees, but this is like a lawyer, defense attorney's dream, because it goes to having to prove intent. And I've been hit by an uninsured motorist, and the excuse was, I thought my mom paid the bill. So, whereas I don't think I'd have any problem at all with further discussion, especially in civil law, trying to drill down to what it would look like. This is so broad that for a belief that we could provide intent in every case, I think it's just a pretty difficult stretch. So I would be against the amendment as it's written, just as it's written.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to vote against this amendment simply because I think, and then I'm going to vote against the bill because I think the amendment tries to make palatable a bill that has an incredible amount of problems. You know, what this bill actually does is it attempts to create a connection between two things which should not be connected, all right? Whether or not I have insurance I'm breaking the law by not having insurance shouldn't have anything to do with whether or not I'm injured because somebody blew a stop sign. No more than whether or not I paid my taxes on time should have anything to do with whether or not somebody blew a stop sign, all right? You know, if I shouldn't expect my constituents to give up their civil rights to expect redress or at least attempt to expect redress for wrongdoing on somebody else's part because of wrongdoing on their part, which had nothing to do with the incident in which the person was injured. So I'd encourage a no vote on the amendment and a no vote on the bill.
Thank you for your comments. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just because it's my amendment, if I could just have the last word, and I
certainly
will make it short. Thank you, Representative Biskins. I was torn a little bit in that sense. So, what do you do? Should this really be two different bills? But it's not. It's one bill. And I hear your concerns. Representative Benson, in terms of the word knowingly, certainly we use the word knowingly throughout the law. There are a number of crimes that are based on intent. Did the person, or knowledge, did the person know what they were doing? So this is a question that 12 good people in your community or my community, if this case went to court, would be required to determine. Could this language be sharpened? If Representative Masrall wants to do that work now, I'm happy to do that with them. I honestly did not know about this bill until very, very recently. Literally, I was reading a lot about it this morning, trying to see what other states do. To Mr. Johnson's point about texting, Mr. Chair, 169.475, Representative Masrall does prohibit texting. And I think Representative Fornstein is asking a very good question, which I think should be answered in this committee, because it's in this committee that we heard the texting bill originally. So I would ask that you consider the texting concerns, because you might find that the accidents caused by texting might rise to the level of the accidents caused by DUI. And I'm by no means defending DUI drivers, and nor are you, but I don't think you're meaning to insulate, protect texters who might cause an accident in which someone is paralyzed. And that's one thing, members, we have to think about, that these non-economic damages, you have to think about that some of the horrific accidents that might occur, the paralyzation that might occur, and that someone finds out, but I can't recover for that because a mistake was made. Not because I intentionally didn't pay my insurance, because a mistake was made. And I can assure you from working around the table, mistakes can be made. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for your latitude and allow me to have the last word.
Clerk, take the roll.
Beard?
Chair votes nay.
Murdoch?
No.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Biskins?
No.
Champion?
Yes.
Eakin?
Yes.
Gauthier?
Yes.
Hossman?
Yes.
Keel?
No.
Leidiger?
No.
Morrow?
Yes.
Murray?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
Sanders?
No.
Schmansky?
No.
Vogel?
No.
Clerk report total. There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Masrall, I voted no on the amendment. This is civil law work. I would strongly encourage you to work with Representative Morrow, if this bill makes it to civil law, that something like this be addressed. Because in the chairman's comments, I'm going to make some comments when we're done here. Members, believe it or not, there is one person who did sign up to testify against the entire bill. I'd like to ask, Mr. Joel Carlson, if you please come to the witness stand. Mr. Carlson. And if you would, the usual, welcome to the committee door.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Mr. Chairman, my name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. And our member attorneys represent businesses and consumers when they are the victims of injury that they may suffer as a result of someone else's wrongdoing, fraudulent conduct, or negligence. And we have serious concerns about the bill that's before you. We support all efforts, reasonable efforts that you can think of to increase the number of people who are driving with insurance. That is a worthy goal. We support that outcome. In fact, we opposed the effort a few years ago by the insurance industry to remove the requirement that you demonstrate financial responsibility at the time when you renewed your license plates. We thought that law helped people get insurance, and the complaint was that, well, maybe it's only in effect for 30 days and then they cancel it. At least it was in effect at the time they had the renewal of their license plates. But we don't feel that House File 730 will do anything to increase the number of uninsureds. It will not do anything to benefit consumers. And we think it's just a windfall, for the insurance companies when their own insureds cause an accident throughout and no fault to the other driver. You know, what the problem with this bill, and I appreciate the comments very much about the penalty, but the penalty in this bill is not $600. This bill shifts the responsibility for an accident to an uninsured driver when that did not cause the accident. That is the biggest problem with this bill. Because that penalty on page 2 of the bill, where you cannot recover any loss for inconvenience, physical impairment, loss of limbs, disfigurement, scarring, other non-money losses, these are thousands of dollars. This isn't a $600 penalty. These are thousands of dollars that your constituent may suffer through no fault of their own when they are injured in an automobile accident. And while we don't have a dog in the fight of whether or not the appropriate penalty is $200 or $600, we absolutely believe that it's wrong when you are not at fault for the accident, that for whatever reason your car is not insured, you are barred from making an economic recovery, or non-economic recovery. And you need to know that this bill denies us our constitutional rights. As Representative Biskins mentioned, we have a constitutional right to a trial by jury. This precludes that. We have a right to a complete remedy in our Constitution. This denies that us that right. And it ignores all of the reasons that people may not be driving with insurance. All reasons. It doesn't matter. There was an article in the paper yesterday, maybe you saw it, about a woman whose ex-husband didn't tell her that the insurance had lapsed. You just don't know. And this bill does not apply just to the owner of the vehicle. If you look at the language of the bill, and I'll take you there in a second, it applies to anybody who's driving a car that happens to be uninsured. So who is harmed by this? Principally people that have non-economic losses are young, they are women. That is who is harmed by this bill. And many times through no fault of their own. And, you know, there are obviously economic reasons that we have right now in this country for people that are making decisions about house payments. We have record unemployment across the country. We have a record foreclosure rate in this country. And there are a lot of people sitting around the table saying, do I pay that insurance bill or do I pay that house payment or food? There are a lot of reasons why people may not be able to buy insurance. And Minnesota, by the way, is right in about the middle of the pack as far as where our auto insurance fall among the country. We are neither at the high end nor the low. And this bill will not lower auto insurance premiums for anyone. For all of us, it will do nothing. But if you happen to be driving an uninsured car and you are injured by someone, and I would say by an impaired driver as well, the exclusion as it relates to an impaired driver only implies if you are the owner of the vehicle. If you look at the bill, Mr. Chairman and members, that exclusion as it relates to impaired drivers only applies to someone who is the owner of the vehicle that is uninsured. If I am driving a car that I don't own, that is not insured, if my parents forgot to insure the car, and I don't, and I'm injured by a impaired driver, I am not entitled to non-economic losses, pain, suffering, physical impairment for the rest of my life. This isn't a $600 penalty. These are thousands and thousands of dollars that people would be denied of their right to a recovery. So, Mr. Chairman and members, we don't believe that this bill will do anything to address the problem of uninsured motorists. Is clearly a windfall for people that should be paying for damages that their insureds have caused and comes at no benefit to the rest of us. I'd be happy to answer questions. I do appreciate, Mr. Chairman, the time you've taken on this. This is an important transportation policy. There are over 180,000 property damage collisions on our roads each year. This is a serious, serious transportation policy that you have before you, and I appreciate the serious nature that and consideration that you've given it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Well, you're welcome, Mr. Carlson. Should this bill be passed to civil law, will you be making these comments there as well?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, and any chance that there is a form for the very, very few states have adopted this, mm-hmm. very few, and those that have very significant restrictions, unlike this. There is not another law in the country similar to this of the six or seven states that have adopted it.
Okay, briefer answer to this question, Mr. Carlson. Should this prevail, can you work with the author and with those with concerns to perhaps craft language that would be a little more acceptable in the form of an amendment the next committee?
Mr. Chairman, I will absolutely try and work with Representative Mazarol and others on this, but you can't be half pregnant. You can't take something that didn't cause the accident and all of a sudden insert it into a liability case. And something Representative Mazarol said at the beginning, just want everyone to be clear, this bill has nothing to do with no-fault automobile insurance. This only has to do with liability coverage when you have a claim against a negligent driver. No fault only covers your own losses that you pay for. This has nothing to do with this. This is my ability to have a liability case against the negligent driver.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to request a roll call on the Mazerall bill, final passage.
Well, certainly. Roll call requested on the bill. Representative Mazerall, comments to comments just made or anything like that?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I think we've pretty much hashed it out.
We have. Before we get to that point, though, the chair is going to offer an amendment that on line 115 of the A1 amendment, that the unstricken language be reinstated. Members, I'm going to speak to the amendment that the chair just made. The in my 10 years here, one of the things I remember we did in a $4.2 billion deficit years ago was we balanced some of the judiciary's cutbacks by increasing fines and penalties rather drastically. The understanding being that as the economy picked up, maybe we'd go back to tickets and so on that were a little more in line with what they used to be. We have not done that. And I'm familiar anecdotally with cases in my own mm-hmm. family, in my own neighborhood, mm-hmm. where young families that are struggling to make ends meet and their budgets are tight all of a sudden get slapped with $300-some fines for maybe they were speeding, maybe they were charged with reckless driving or something like that. And that pretty much breaks the budget for several months. I agree that driving without insurance is a serious breach of personal responsibility. But to raise this from 200 to 600 when the courts already have the authority to increase the penalty for egregious behavior just strikes me as more piling on to people that can least afford it. So thank you for letting me vent on that. It's the motion that I've made for the amendment. Again, so everyone's clear, basically it has the effect of leaving 200 in the bill. Further questions for the maker of the amendment? Seeing none, I'll entertain a voice vote. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We now have the bill in front of us as amended. House File 730 with, let's see, the A1 amendment and then the amendment to the amendment. Is there further brief discussion to the bill? The motion is that the bill be recommended to pass and referred to the Civil Law Committee. And a roll call has been requested. Seeing none, well, just a moment here. Members, I feel it's important to explain because this is an unusual procedure. I'm hearing the discussion on the bill. A roll call has been requested. I prefer that had not been requested because I'd rather just had the bill either lay over or die in this committee on a voice vote. But since we've been put on the spot, I owe it to my members to have a discussion that I'm going to vote no on the bill, but you may vote as your conscience dictates, and we'll see what the committee wishes. The clerk will take the roll.
Beard?
Beard votes nay.
Murdoch?
Yes.
Hornstein?
No.
Benson?
No.
Biskins?
No.
Champion?
No.
Eakin?
No.
Gauthier?
No.
Hausman?
No.
Keel?
No.
Leidiger?
No.
Morrow?
No.
Murray?
No.
Nelson?
No.
Sanders? Oh, Szymanski?
No.
Vogel?
No.
There being 16 nays, the motion does not prevail. The bill is not passed to the next committee. Mr. Mazerall, thank you for the discussion here, and we'll move to the next bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With the one yes.
Members, thank you for your discussion on that bill. I'm sure the noble intent of the bill will be back before us in some fashion because we do need to address the personal responsibility. But let's move to the next bill, House File 1323, Representative Hoppe. Members, this will be for discussion purposes only. We're going to lay this bill over at the moment. But we do want to begin talking about things that actually impact some of the intense discussion we just had. Representative Hoppe, welcome to the committee. Please shed further light on this insurance business, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And for the record, I'm glad that we're not having a vote on this bill today just discussing it. What essentially we're trying to do as the Department of Public Safety is looking at reworking their computer system. We right now, like the author of the last bill, the goal of this is to try to get more people insured. Depending on the insurance company you talk to, somewhere between 15% and 25% of motorists in the state of Minnesota are uninsured, primarily in the metropolitan area. The only thing we're trying to do is get more people insured. What this would do is create a database that would be available to state troopers, court personnel, and other law enforcement personnel. And the gist of the bill is that if a state trooper pulls me over, they already know my name and address, and they can pull up the license plate number on the car. This would give them the ability to know whether or not I have auto insurance before they come up to the vehicle. It does nothing to address penalties or anything else. We're just talking about the framework of how we would set up a system, and it would be nice to have, I think, in terms of for troopers and other law enforcement personnel to know when they come up to a vehicle. And I do have Mr. Johnson here as well to testify to any questions about the bill or to get more in-depth.
As Mr. Johnson comes forward, Representative Hoppe, one of the things that the chair is interested in is, what are the constraints we have now that prevent this from happening? And we may get into this a little bit more in just a moment, members, when we talk about the MNLAR system. So, Ms. McCormick, you'll be teed up that we're going to be talking about this. Mr. Johnson, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm mindful of your time, and would maybe just make a couple of comments. What this the bill represents, House File 1323, it's actually a model act developed by, it's called the Insurance Industry Committee on Motor Vehicle Administration. It's not a lobbying group. It's a group of individuals within the insurance industry that works with the motor vehicle administrators, the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, looking for ways to get what's the best compliance systems in terms of verifying insurance. And so what this bill represents is the best current effort to move to a web-based or online verification system. I'm not an expert on the details of the system, Mr. Chairman, but states are moving to this system. I think the answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, is probably a budgetary constraints. So this isn't an attempt to solve the budgetary issues, but it is an attempt to bring it before the legislature, and we're committed to working with you, Mr. Chairman, and Chairman Hoppe, and the state agency in getting Minnesota a modern, effective, frankly, a web-based online verification system where we can kind of expedite the checking of insurance, which is what the states would like to do for enforcement of the law. And I guess the last comment, Mr. Chairman, is that a number of states are moving in this direction of the legislation before you right now. I have a list of about 10 states that have implemented this type of system and about a half a dozen states that are in a testing mode for it. So I don't have the budget numbers here, Mr. Chairman, but I think this is definitely an issue that the technology's there. Some money costs, both from the private sector and whoever is asking the question, but it's totally a doable project. It's just, again, the budgetary constraints and how long does it take to get to that. I know this issue is strongly supported by law enforcement community and the police chiefs and others within, as Chairman Hoppe indicated, are looking to enhance and expedite their ability to check for insurance. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, we're committed to working with you and the legislature and the administration and the agencies with the responsibility to get to a system. Which we should be able to do. I don't know the timing of it, but we're committed to doing that.
I have a question for you, Mr. Johnson. Before I do, let me go to Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hoppe, I guess I could be jumping the gun. I thought maybe we'd get a little bit further in it, but I want to make sure I had my hand up. Because what I didn't hear was whether or not this technology could be used to be for cause, rather than, you're pulled over for some other infraction. Could the officer employ the dash cam for the purposes of identifying cars or truck for that purpose, and then conclude from that using that technology that their person is uninsured and then pull them over for that reason.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Benson. The legislation doesn't say anything about that, and that is not our intent. There are enough reasons for law enforcement to pull people over. This is just an additional two. What's that?
105 of them, to be exact. I have the list.
I can think of 107.
Okay.
Not to one-up you, but I think what we're doing is just hoping that when a law enforcement agent does pull you over for any of those 105 reasons, that they are also able to take a look at this. Mm. And, I mean, our goal here is not anything nefarious. It's to make sure that people have auto insurance, that we have safer highways and byways for all of us, everybody, insured and uninsured.
Representative Benson, follow-up.
Follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe that it's nefarious. We just lowered it back down to $200, so I'm not having an issue with it. I'm just wondering if, indeed, that could be used in that way. This does not preclude it from happening. It would be public safety's rulemaking. Where do we get to possibly they could do that?
Representative
Hoppe. Well, thank you, Representative Benson, and I think Representative Beard said it well. There are already over 100 reasons that law enforcement can legitimately pull you over. I don't think it matters whether it's 105 or 106. The troopers and the police are generally speaking out there to keep the roads safe, and I don't think this will give them another reason, but it could. You're right. It doesn't preclude that.
Members, a little housekeeping before we go to Representative. Do you have a follow-up?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Before I go to Representative Hornstein, there we do have to move the bill to get in front of us. So, Representative Hornstein, will you move House File 13? What is this? 83.
23. Yeah. Yes, yeah, Mr. Chairman.
That one, to get it in front of us for discussion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hoppe, since we're engaging a state agency in this, do you have a sense of what the cost is going to be fiscally for them to implement this?
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hornstein. I do not. Mr. Johnson might. But one of the things that needs to be worked out is, I think this is a good idea, but one of the things that we need to talk about, one of the reasons I'm glad it's not moving forward, is how we get it paid for.
Mr. Johnson, any comments on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think with the rest of your agenda, with the state agency coming up, we've had meetings with Pat McCormick and the officials at the Department of Public Safety. I think they've got a fuller description of the systems, the upgrade, the updating. I think this is a project, depending on kind of the scope of that, that the technology is fully available to do this today. So I think it's an issue of it really insurers then under this system would maintain their own database. And when an inquiry would come in via the internet, you set it up with that in place. Whoever is making the inquiry, then the company would be giving a response back, yes or no, to current valid coverage. So it's being done. I can't comment, and I don't have the specifics. I think the agency would have to address where their systems are and that kind of the cost ramifications and where this might or might not fit in that. I simply don't know that.
Representative Hoppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hornstein and members. One of the things that you or we as a legislature can decide if we do this and decide that this should be part of the new public safety department database going forward, one of the things that this bill does not address, but one of the things that will need to be talked about is a penalty. If law enforcement does pull somebody over and they're prosecuted for it, is it a $50 fine? Is it a $10 fine? Is it $200? I don't know that. This bill doesn't address that. But if they are in maybe all law enforcement, maybe it's more heavily enforced in some parts of the state than others, but I think it's at least something to think about that we could take a portion of those monies that are collected and use that to pay for, the ongoing upkeep of the system, the initial upfront expense to get everything going to do the software and everything else. I don't know what that is.
Follow-up, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know, Representative Hoppe, this is kind of a work in progress, and when you do finalize it, even if it's just staff time or whatever cost the agency would incur, it'd be helpful to have a fiscal note, I think.
So noted.
I agree.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hoppe. And I guess, I don't know if this is a comment or a question, but I know, because it sounds like we're not capable of doing this yet, but this kind of harkens back to the last bill when Mr. Carlson testified about how, and I remember in the time we've been on the Transportation Committee, they took off the requirement that they had to, you had to self-report your insurance number when you released your tabs. And are we going back to that system, but going at it a different way? And I know they are. I vaguely remember the arguments, I think for Mr. Johnson, or but somebody in the insurance industry about how they had no way of doing this now, because that was discussed about doing this computer. So hopefully, as we move forward, this system can be done. I don't think it's a bad idea, but I guess I would have concerns if people were being pulled over when the officer pulls it up on his computer in his car and sees that that car in front of me is not listed as having insurance, and we're going to pull them over and write them a ticket for not having insurance. I would have concerns about that, but making sure people have insurance and are insured is not a bad thing for us to be striving for.
Thank you for your comments. Members, further questions or comments for either Mr. Johnson or Representative Hoppe? Representative Hoppe, thank you for bringing the bill forward. You've set up a nice segue into the next two discussions with the Department of Public Safety. And members, some of you had comments you may want to make or questions you may want to ask of Ms. McCormick when she comes forward. Representative Hoppe, the closing word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this is, Representative Nelson, I think you said it well, this is a work in progress. I think this is a worthy goal. I think it's a good thing for law enforcement and for all of us. The goal here is to just make sure more people are as equipped with auto insurance as they should be when they're out on the roads. And if any of you have ideas on how this would best be done, you know, I'm sure we're going to hear from the folks. I hope we're not going to hear that we can't do it, but I think we're going to hear a lot of constructive criticism, and it's a work in progress. And so I look forward to any and all input and feedback. And thank you for your time.
Representative Hoppe and Mr. Johnson, thank you for your comments. With that, members, we're going to lay House Bill 1323 over, and we will move to item number 7 on our agenda, Department of Public Safety. We're going to have a brief discussion about commercial driver's license programs, but we really want to get to how the MNLAR system is doing. So, members, if we could hold that thought as we're having the discussions here. Members, if you have agendas in front of you, you'll see there's like about 12 things on there. After this discussion, I think the only thing we're going to have time for is number 12, adjournment. Everything else...
how long is that?
Well, it depends on what you want to argue about, whether there's a roll call or not, Representative Hornstein. members, anything else, we'll be moving to a future meeting, and it appears that Wednesday's meeting, I'll just tell you right now, Wednesday's meeting will be postponed, and we will be taking these up at a subsequent meeting. So, more housekeeping in just a moment here. So, okay, Representative Nelson, you have a comment, question?
Well, I guess I've been with the registration, and it's up there. I've been getting phone calls from constituents regarding the. I mean, and I think it's because they're implementing a new system, but people not getting their license and their titles.
Oh yes, I got a few of those
in a long time. And actually, because of the car accident I had when I had it. It took me almost 14 weeks to get my title, and so I was. Are we working on solving that problem? Because I didn't like the emails I got back when I originally emailed the department and asked not identify myself as Representative Nelson, but I asked about how long is it supposed to take after about 2 months, and got emailed back that I was told that, well, you had give me your license plate number or your VIN number, and we'll tell you. And then 3 weeks later, that was between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and I asked after Christmas, emailed back, and I got kind of a snippy email back that it takes 10 to 13 weeks, and if that's all I would have wanted in the first place, it would have satisfied me originally. I would have had to give the other information. And a couple weeks later, I did get my title, but it was almost 14 weeks before I got my title.
We have anecdotal stories like that. I got two or three here that I won't burden you with at the moment. But
yes, I'm just hoping that the problem is being solved.
Yeah, Ms. Ellison and Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee. Are you going to lead with MNLAR's discussion, or are they these two kind of go together?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. And certainly I'm glad to respond to Representative Nelson's question, and then we can talk about MNLARs. First of all, let me apologize for you getting the runaround in that fashion, because we have tried to be pretty upfront with our customers as to how long the turnaround time is and to offer the expedited title service if someone needs it. And as you know, because the legislation was passed by the several years ago, I think in 2005, 2006, to allow an expedited fee for moving the title through the process quickly. And as a result, while it has helped in terms of responding to customers and getting their titles more quickly, it also has contributed to a problem in terms of us being inundated with expedited titles. But that really isn't the source of the problem. The source of the problem is that we take title applications on paper, and when that information comes into the department, then we have to enter that information after analyzing and verifying all the taxes that are involved, as well as ensuring that we check the information out on the National Motor Vehicle Information System. It's a complex process. And so as a result, as you were saying, right now we have about a 90-day title turnaround time. We are doing everything we can to try to address the problems. One of the problems we've had is a great deal of expert staff, long-term staff that are retiring. We have 9 vacancies that we're in the process of filling right now. It's a very complex and extensive training process that those staff need to go through that takes time, so that they start out doing the more simple transactions, so that takes some time to ramp up. We are taking this very seriously. I can't give you a promise that we will try very hard to reduce that title turnaround, but we're never going to get to that 14-day turnaround until we have MNLARs in place. And we can talk about MNLARs, but let me first just say that we are working. We've put in place a new hiring process that we think will speed up our hiring of staff. We have also hired a production specialist to look at our entire title production system to see where he may find some efficiencies, because it's an outsider coming in with this specialized background, to see if there are ways that we can look at the process differently. And we also did go through the Kaizen process with our expedited title process, and that has tremendously helped in moving forward the expedited title process.
Excuse me, Ms. Corbett, what did you call that,
The Kaizen process. That's also called the lean process.
Okay.
And that's where you look at the entire process, and you have staff that are totally involved in that, and you look at every step in the process, and then you work together to find efficiencies in the process. The Department of Administration has a lean project, and several of our staff and our supervisors have been trained in the process, and that has helped with us making quite a few efficiencies in the expedited title process.
Okay, I'm sorry, there's several thoughts rattling around my mind while you're talking here, because I've been at this now for, what is this, our ninth, or this is our 10th year, isn't
it,
Representative Nelson?
Year.
Okay. Before I call on questions, do you have a little more to present here? This is committee work, Ms. McCormick. Let me call on Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. Yeah. Chair. And like you said, I understood that it's going to take a while. I understand they're going through the change of the system, so I was patient. But I know one of the constituents that got to me when you talk about the expedited title. He had waited three months for his title, and he was very taken aback when he said, "Well, if you pay extra $25 or whatever the fee is, you can get it. We can get it to you in a week." And it's like, well, that kind of torqued him off because he had already been waiting that long. But anyway,
yeah.
I just want that said. I'll drop it from here. It's
thank well, you just saved me from saying it, but thank you. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. McCormick, I, too, am getting calls and stuff. And my suggestion is, I appreciate the honesty that we got here, but our constituents seem to be hearing a different story. The shutdown has been a blame. The CIS computer system has never talked about. And I think citizens of Minnesota would be okay with that if they knew what was going on. So somewhere down the line, communication's breaking down, and so we're having to answer constituents who are saying, you mean this is all because of the shutdown, when in fact that wasn't at all it. And it puts us in a difficult position, as it does with you. So somehow I think that needs to get conveyed back.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I totally agree with you. And once we've heard that from several customers and from legislative staff, we have worked with our public information staff as well as with our deputies and come up with talking points that talk about the fact that this isn't a result of the state shutdown, and try to explain on the front side that there is an expedited title process available, so that if they need the title right away, and that's the expectation when they come into the deputy registrar's office, they know that is an option, rather than waiting at the back end, like you're saying, for 3 or 4 weeks, and then they find out they could have gotten it more quickly if they had known that they should request that. That won't help, and it won't make all customers happy, but I think it's important, and we have worked very hard now to try to resolve those issues, and with different talking points and training with the staff that handle customer calls and customer requests. So I apologize for that you've had to go through those kinds of customer constituent services.
As we have ongoing discussions, Ms. McCormick, for instance, you were here for the last two bills, and you know how important we take the this insurance verification program. First of all, that people have insurance. Secondly, that how can officers and others quickly ascertain whether the insurance is actually in effect. And I can think of some other useful value-added components of that whole thing, where I can check to see how my kids are doing or how my cars look, my insurance policies look to somebody who might be following along behind me and typing my license plate into the system. Those things concern me, but it seems that none of this works until we have a central system that everybody can access. And I think that system is Minlar's. And talk to us about how that's coming and how much longer we have to wait until this is actually able to get up and running. And then I've got a host of other questions on how we're doing. But if you would like to proceed, absent any other questions or comments, I see you have your what we call that, PowerPoint teed up here. So go ahead, and then I expect some questions on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I said, the MNLARS system, as you know, is the Minnesota Licensing and Registration System Project, which is a project within DVS. And when finished, the goal is to have MNLARS provide efficient, secure, a secure system for DVS transactions. It would replace the core functionality for the DVS operations involving driver's licensing, title and registration, driver compliance, dealer licensing and inspection, inventory, and finance and records.
To that point, and we're just going to have you back. Members, we're out of here in 6 minutes. But dealer licensing and inspection, has MATA been a Minnesota Association of Auto Dealer Associations? Have they been part of the input into developing this RFP or the system parameters we're going to need to actually have them do licensing and titling and so on? Have they been part of that? For that matter, how about the deputy registrars? Where do they fit into this picture?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the MADA and the MDRA and driver's license agents were all part of what we put together. We talked about during our pre-design as the as-is-to-be sessions that we had to write the requirements that are needed for the design and build of MNLARS. And in addition to that, during the month of February, we plan to bring in the dealers in one meeting, and we have a deputy tech advisory committee in another meeting to look at kind of a walkthrough of future business processes. We're also going to be meeting with our staff during February to kind of get their input and reaction to some of the potential procedures and processes that we'll be looking at. So that is coming up very soon.
Good.
As this slide just gives you an overview of the state revenue collected and the current numbers that DVS produces. Our official numbers for 2011 aren't available. I can tell you that we're estimating that state revenue collected will be $975 million versus the $950 on the slide. We issue about 1.3 million titles, 4.6 million registrations, 1.6 million driver's license and ID cards. We have customer contacts of over 1.1 million Minnesotans, and web user transactions around 375,000. We interface with over 63 other systems, and we have regular interaction, as you know, with citizens, law enforcement, the courts, state and federal agencies. As you know, in 2007, OET conducted a systems readiness analysis, and they found that our systems and processes were significant and highly visible government activities, but the platforms, database, application, access controls were not sound. At that time, they stated that DVS should limit investments in current technologies to critical needs, and that DVS needed to redesign a set of processes and systems in order to fix the current systems was not a viable strategy. So at risk if DVS systems fail, data security, data access, transaction information, state laws, federal mandates might not be able to be implemented without jeopardizing the overall system integrity. The system support, which is necessary for law enforcement and other business partners, might not be available, and a potential loss of close to $1 billion in annual state revenue.
Ms. McCormick, could you pause? Representative Morrill.
Mr. Chair, is your intent to have more of this in a later meeting?
Yes.
You said, if I could just then telegraph a question?
Certainly.
I'll ask in that next meeting, Ms. McCormick, is about the 375,000 web hits, I guess is the term I'll use for the moment. Given the number of transactions that are engaged in overall, it seems like that number actually might be low, but I have no sense of scale or number. If you could just give us a sense of whether there might be efforts, might be money-saving efforts, Mr. Chair, if we can increase the number of web transactions, given the overall number of transactions on that page.
Thank you for asking that question. I'll cross it off the list of questions I was going to ask, but yes, you, for the next time we have you back.
MNLAR's implementation will increase data integrity and system security, increase fraud prevention, improve accessibility of information for business partners and customers, and improve support for law enforcement, our deputy registrars, our driver license agents, dealers, and other business partners. Improve the timeliness of service because we would be entering the data at the point of service, and increasing customer convenience. The added value would be to simplify and automate data collection activities and standardize our processes, reduce the time that's needed for paperwork and paper flow currently, and potentially expand our customer service options and web-based services. We also need improved document management capability and improved reporting capability.
Okay, Ms. McCormick, I just ask you to hit the pause button right there. We got about 1 minute to do some housekeeping and so on. But I'm going to be asking some questions about this slide in particular on how we're doing and why we're at where we're at. I want to know how the RFP is coming. I want to know why the timelines have slipped. I want to know who you're dealing with, and if we have multiple people competing for this contract, and so on and so forth. But we'll be maybe I can send you some of those questions ahead of time. So when we have you back, we can have this discussion, because this is very important, members. We've plowed some ground here today that's very important to public safety and to our personal responsibility to each other as we use the highways and byways in this state. This seems to be a core
backbone of making all of this work as efficiently and effectively as possible. Because I think most of us actually want to do the right thing in this state, and sometimes we just need a gentle prod or gentle poke, or we just need to know how things are going. Ms. Ellison?
Mr. Chair, Mary Ellison, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. I just didn't want to leave the committee hearing today without saying that we hear your concerns, and particularly regarding this, the concerns that have been expressed about the title turnaround. We hear them loud and clearly. We are not, I promise you, we are not back at the agency sitting on our hands or hoping that the problem will just go away. It is a complicated problem, and we're devoting a lot of resources to try to solve it in the short term. We're counting on MNLARS for the long term, but I just wanted you to know that we are committed to customer service and better communication, and you can always refer people directly to me or to the commissioner's office who feel that they're not getting the service they should get, and we will follow up.
Thank you for that offer. I appreciate it. Members, we will not be meeting on Wednesday of this week. Our next meeting is Wednesday, the 8th of February, after we go home for precinct caucuses. That will be in the basement hearing room. And if you just want to make a note, Monday meetings will be here. Wednesday meetings will be right underneath here in the basement hearing room. If I remember right, that's the one that's freezing cold. So be sure. Oh, this one is too? Okay. Well, maybe it's just there's a hot chair today. I don't feel it. Feel free to bring a wrap or sweatshirts or whatever you need when we go to the basement hearing room. I've come to, speaking of high tech, Ms. McCormick, I understand you can go back to your office and follow us on Twitter. That just sounds dangerous to me, members. I've just known too many people get in trouble with Twitter accounts, but apparently we have one. Oh, it's only informational purposes. We won't be sending any pictures or any other comments. MN House Transpo. Twitter, at MN House Transpo, if you care to do that. And on Facebook, you can come over there and like me, I guess, at Minnesota House Transportation Committee. So you can look us up on Facebook, too. Wow, that's pretty cool, huh? And neener, we beat your timelines. We're on Facebook before you guys are, I guess. So how about that? Again, Melissa, Nancy, and Christina, welcome to the committee. Members, anything else come in front of the committee today? With that, oh, yes, one thing. The departments did good work in putting these together. If you just put them back in your folder, if we didn't touch them today, put them back in the save folder, and we'll have the pages and interns sort that out for next Wednesday, the 8th. With that, members, we are adjourned.